peaceful garden in leafy commuter land. But looks can be deceiving. Over the years, old pottery and tile have turned up in the flower beds, so the local archaeological society decided to dig a bit deeper. And when they did, they discovered what could be the remains of a massive manor house. A house that belonged to the Cheyne family, one of the most extraordinary dynasties in medieval England.
A mob accused of assault, extortion, even torture, but who went on to become one of England's most respectable and wealthy families.
The headquarters of this medieval mafia-style empire has vanished, covered up by the present house and gardens, which is where we come in.
We've got just 3 days to unlock the secrets hidden somewhere underneath these immaculate lawns.
Chesham Boys is in Buckinghamshire, about 35 miles northwest of London. Nearly 300 years ago, this hill was home to a massive manor house. But today, the only clues to its existence are this map of 1735, plus some intriguing geophysics and a test trench, dug by volunteers from the local archaeological society.
Yvonne, this big rectangle here where the grass isn't cut, that's where you put in the trench, isn't it?
Oh, it is indeed.
What did you find?
Well, to our amazement, we found a very large 2 by 1 metre pitch tile hearth, and it's set in a beaten chalk floor and has a wall running along behind it.
And you had your own geophys?
Yes, we had our own geophys. We started out actually working in this area. We found a number of straight line features which looked like the foundations of buildings.
You've done all this fantastic work. Why on earth do you need us?
Oh, well, we need you because we're a really small society. There's a limit to what we can do. And in addition to asking questions about the evolution of the house and its decline, we would really like to address some of the bigger issues. You know, what was the settlement here before the grand house developed?
So, basically, you want to know everything about this place from the end of the Saxon period through to the English Civil War. I think I'll just go and have a word with the team. Hey, lads, we're going to have to buck our ideas up. They are very good amateur archaeologists.
They have been for 30 years, to my knowledge, yeah.
So where do we start?
Well, we've got a plan of 1735, which gives us an idea of the house. The house is in red, and it's surrounded by large gardens. And there are enough features surviving through to the modern mapping to be able to overlay the two.
What's this little blue square?
That's the present house that you see there. And interestingly, the modern house there is on the same footprint to me as the older house.
Yeah.
So it's possible that building may contain the original footprint or even bits of the original house.
Need to snoop.
All right, we've got a picture of a house on the ground, but it doesn't tell us anything about its date or what it was like, does it?
Well, exactly. But we do have an inventory made just 9 years afterwards, and it's a really lovely document. It says, in the hall, 24 oak chairs, one long table, and then a cellars, servants' hall, dairy house, brew house fill. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Yeah. In the gallery, 7 Indian pictures and 98 prints.
What none of you have mentioned is the archaeological evidence. What we could do is reopen perhaps just the end of this trench and actually pursue those floor levels through, and then we can use that as a springboard for our own work.
So we start to survey the lawns, clear the way for geophysics.
You'll also be the normal course of
the... And brief the team from the local archaeological society.
And your input is really important to us, so we can work together like a team.
We're relying on them to help us, and it looks like they're going to keep us on our toes. Together, we reopen the society's trench, where they found a large hearth. If we can find the lost manor house, it could help us to understand how the notorious Cheyne family went on to become respected members of the British establishment. It's a story that goes to the very heart of how our society was shaped, and it should lie somewhere beneath these lawns. Our starting point is the hearth, which could be a sign that this area was a kitchen. And if it was, then Jonathan's hoping he can use this to match the map to the inventory, identifying the rooms and pointing us in the direction of our next trench.
Inventories are often created, aren't they, where a person goes from one room to the next in sequence, and you can sometimes chart your way around a house. If we're talking about a hearth there and kitchens, and then you come around to this area where there are formal gardens, I think we've moved from kitchens down to bowling green room. But there's also in that gallery, the long gallery, which tends to be long first floor rooms overlooking gardens and water features.
So you know what you've got to find, John?
Well, we're not going to find the upper gallery.
No, no. Oh, come on!
Okay, we're not going to find that, but there does seem to be a mound, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's going in the same direction as that feature.
While geophysics look for the long gallery, Phil's uncovered the hearth dug by the local society last summer.
West, it's really exciting to see it again. You can see, actually, it materialises into layers of floors, I think.
So how much of that sequence did you see in this trench?
We really only saw it in sections.
So you've really seen none of it going that way?
Nope.
So we decide to extend the trench under the watchful eyes of the Archaeological Society.
Lovely little digger, isn't it? Just nice for these little keyhole jobs.
And geophysics shows a strong signal that, if Jonathan's right, could be the long gallery.
Now, we can clearly see the earthwork now it's been trimmed. The only thing is, talking to Stuart, he's not convinced that that bank is the long gallery. He thinks it's maybe more a bit this way.
Right.
I think the only way to resolve it is actually take a trench from here right up the bank and see what's going on.
Well, you need to stay away from the tree that way. Yeah. I mean, I did wonder about this side, but we'll hit the bins, won't we, if we go that way, whereas we've got a little bit more length that way.
The peaceful garden is now a bustling archaeological site. But despite the surveying, digging and strimming going on all around him, with a map in hand and earthworks underfoot, Stuart's in a world of his own.
There's some trees down the avenue down there. You
just with Henry, Ray Sands placed the map over the modern topographical data.
Can we manipulate it now and actually have a look sort of at the different views?
The reconstruction shows the house dominated the landscape in 1735.
What about other gaps through the different bits of wood?
Well, there's a gap over on this side.
It shows vistas were carved through the surrounding woodland for the house to see and be seen from miles away.
I mean, this feels like a view for the house across the formal gardens. So you actually feel that's like one of the sort of frontages of the house.
If they're right, then this may well have been the location of the grandest and most impressive part of the manor, the front range. And thanks to his morning spent strolling through the gardens, Stuart thinks he can now pinpoint this on the ground.
Mick, I've been working with this 1735 map and the modern map against it. And it's becoming apparent to me that a lot of the features which are shown on this 75 map are still surviving in some of the boundaries that are still here.
Yeah.
Can you see this very large range, the red, this is on the 17th, underneath? There's a bit going the other side of the garage, onto the lawn, and there's a large bit coming up here towards this bowling green, which is this raised area behind us.
So basically we're standing on it?
Yeah, well, actually, you see this raised area over here?
This lump in front,
It should be in here.
Right.
So if Stuart and the map are correct, then the front of the house should be somewhere around here. The map was drawn in 1735, after the manor's owners, the Cheney family, died out. The Cheneys were one of the country's richest and most respectable families. They bought Henry VIII's former royal palace of Chelsea and were even bestowed the title of Viscount. But it's the origins of this empire where things get really interesting.
When did the Cheneys actually arrive here?
They arrived here about 1429, and we know that because as soon as they got here, they rigged the local election to Parliament.
Where did they come from?
They come from Bedfordshire, Buckinghamshire, this area, but what they're trying to do is to take over Buckinghamshire.
So how do they do that?
They do it, really, by violence. They're the original robber barons, except they're not barons, they're just knights.
What sort of violence?
In 1430, they were accused of throwing people off their land, putting them in prison, beating them up in prison, torturing them in prison, rigging juries. And the other thing they do, and I've got the document here, they shoot the neighbour's dog at dead of night with two bolts of a crossbow.
So you've got this story of a wealthy family starting off really as not much short of brigands and ending up as courtiers. Is that very unusual?
No, it's really the way that it was done. That was the life of the upper crust.
So, thanks to their criminal record, we know the Cheneys came to Chesham Boys in 1429 and were still living here 300 years later in the house on our map. The present house sits in its footprint. And Jonathan's wondering whether it might contain fragments of the Cheneys Manor House.
So, Julia, when was your house built?
Well, we think in about the middle of the 1820s. Mm. But we don't have any record. That's the great disappointment.
So it's typically Regency period,
yes,
isn't it?
Because it
feels like that. This extraordinary staircase, it really caught my eye.
Yes, but it's rather marvellous.
It draws you up, doesn't it? It's magnetic.
Yes.
But despite the elegant proportions, upstairs, Julia thinks there's something about the design that doesn't add up.
This is a curiosity, because it's very narrow here, and any architect wouldn't have designed it like this.
Isn't that true? Because the rest of the space around here is very generous,
yes,
isn't it? I just think you're right on the money to say no one's going to invent this
exactly.
corner. This, then, is part of an older building.
Yes.
What's it attached to? Is there any period features
yes,
you can show
Yes, it
me?
Goes right down to the cellars, but the one room has oak beams. Mm. And it's meant to be the oldest part of the house.
Cool, let's have a look at that.
The room is on the side of the house next to the trench with the hearth, the area we think might have been a kitchen.
Now, let's have a look at those beams, because you can see there's a slot, look, isn't there, where the timber's been reused. But that one's clean. I can't see any slots in that one. So what I'm saying is that you've got reused oak, but new oak as well. Now, we tend to run out of good, solid structural oak in the middle of the 17th century. And because these beams curve, your ceiling's going to be slightly wobbly.
Mm.
And you wouldn't mind that if this is for a fairly lowly level of accommodation. So I would guess, with the hearth being found outside, we're talking about possibly accommodation for kitchen staff or servants or something.
Oh, really?
That would be my feeling. And I would guess we're talking about the early 17th century. Certainly way before 1820, when your house was supposed to be built.
These beams are the first datable evidence of the Cheneys Manor House. We now know that this part of the house was built in the early 17th century, about 100 years before the map of 1735. And we can begin to make sense of the layout of the house, because together with the hearth, it seems this area was part of the old manor's service wing. On the opposite side of the house, we're opening a trench in the hope of finding the front range and discovering what the house might have looked like and when it was built.
Nice sort of slate here. Come on up a little bit more.
Because although the beams in Julia's ceiling prove there was a house here in the 17th century, we know the Cheneys were living here 200 years before that. And the only thing still standing from then is the church. John Guy thinks it could contain a dark secret, darker even than the family's criminal past.
This is the list of the vicars of this parish, and it goes right back to 1215. And the thing about this parish is that the Cheneys appointed the vicars. But look at this. There's a big gap here between 1418 and 1521. What's fascinating is this is a period of a big religious upheaval in Buckinghamshire, a big heretical movement and a religious persecution.
It seems the Cheneys may have been mixed up in the bloody religious turmoil that ravaged England in the late Middle Ages. But back on site, there's no sign of the early house from which their empire was built. Earlier on, Stuart was really confident that the front range of the big house would be somewhere in this corner of the garden, and Helen and Bridge stuck a trench in. How have we done?
Well, we've still got hope, let's put it that way. We found an amazing lot of modern rubbish and a great hard-packed flint surface with modern finds in it, taken that away, and then we hope this is redeposited natural. We hope there's still something underneath it.
So your hope is the fact that it might not be natural, it might just be a pile of gunk from somewhere else.
I'm desperately clinging on to that, and if it's not, I'll have to have words with Stuart.
Well, we do have another trench over here. You may remember that we saw in the inventory that there was supposed to be a long gallery which had about 98 pictures in it, so that presumably was where the great and the good had a great time. How have we done on the gallery?
Well, I'm standing in a large cut at the moment, which is chock full of rubble, but breaking news, we've just found this wall at the end here.
Ah.
I think might be going under there. I'll have to give a bit more investigation. We've got some really good stuff out of this rubble as well, which John's been having a look at.
Like what, Jonathan?
We've got some really interesting brickwork coming up by the minute. We seem to have two phases. The first one has this very bright white mortar, but the second is the most interesting, and it's this darker, creamy stuff.
Well, that looks nice. Which way up would that go?
Solid bit of kit. You'll be standing in a door, as you think, with that being on one side of you, or a window, and you may be warmed by a chimney that has an octagonal chimney stack there. Lovely stuff.
That's pretty promising, isn't it? I'm going to have to ask you this question. You'll probably say no, but do you think that that wall could be the gallery?
I tell you what I will say. On the map, this is exactly the right site for the gallery. Another thing I'd say is that this kind of brickwork is more typically mid-17th century. If it's the gallery, you know, I'm backing it, but I can't say for certain until we see more.
I'll tell you what, though, Matt. It's more promising in this trench than in the other one.
By a long way.
Which isn't saying much, because other than these few tantalising bricks, we've got very little to show for a hard day's digging. And we're still stuck in the 17th century, even though we know there was a house here from at least 1429. With a lost medieval manor, missing vicars and mutterings of heresy, if we're going to tell the true story of this quiet corner of Commuterland, it looks like we've got our work cut out. The beginning of day two here at Chesham Boys in Buckinghamshire. We're trying to find evidence of the medieval manor house that we know stood here from at least 1429 and was home to the infamous Cheney family.
Hang on a second. Stop one second.
In the past, a manor was more than just one building. It was the heart of the local community, with tenants, farmland, and, as at Chesham Boys, a church. And if we can discover what was going on around the house, it could tell us more about the house itself. A house that, so far, is proving tricky to find.
The locals noticed these earthworks here, and even though it's 100 metres away from the house, it's still part of the same complex. It's part of the developing history of the site, so we've come down to see what we can do in here as well.
So what do you think it is?
Well, when I came in, I thought, well, this looks like settlement remains. Not exactly a deserted medieval village, but probably house sites. After all, it's right next to the church, look.
He's giggling.
Yeah, but he never believes these things, you see.
I'm not convinced about the settlement business. I think these are potentially more to do with gardens, something related to the house, maybe enclosures, paddocks. I don't think it's settlement remains.
Look at his face. He's like a cat with cream on this episode, isn't he?
No, smug is the word you're looking for.
Just because it's all lumps and bumps and maps. You're a happy bunny.
I'm paradise.
The Archaeological Society has already done some geophysics in this field and revealed some intriguing shapes. We're going to build on their work with our own survey.
We're certainly not mortared in, and it's certainly...
In our search for the lost manor house, we've discovered a series of curious box-shaped features in the trench with the hearth.
We've got this wall running along there, and then these little brick spurs coming off there and there and there, and heavily burnt on the top, and then in between these little grey areas, these sort of boxes. Nobody'd seen anything like it at all. And I was talking to Vaughan last night, and he said, well, actually, he said, I've seen something which is a bakehouse. And he's drawn me this little sketch. There's the end elevation of the building, roof. And so what you've got is this firebox, this central firebox, which would probably be over there. And then on either side, you've got these little square-off compartments, which would have been individual ovens to presumably put bread in.
Well, that's extraordinary, because I've just been looking in the kitchen accounts of Anne Cheney for 1630, and it's really the menus for each day, and they were eating fantastic amounts of bread. Just take one day here, the 17th of April, 1630, and just one meal at dinner, 32 loaves for serving men, 20 manchet loaves, that's posh people's bread, very fine wheat bread, 10 great manchet loaves, that's double-size loaves, and 7 loaves for the poor, so that's 69
Good
loaves
Lord.
Just for one meal.
And so what was the date you were suggesting?
This is April 1630.
Oh, well, that's about it. That would fit exactly with this. I mean, that is a known design of that date.
But what's so exciting for me is that you hardly ever look at a document and then 10 minutes later come and look at the actual, you know, structure.
You do now. Yeah.
It's a remarkable find. Combined with the documentary evidence, it gives us an insight into the daily lives of the people who lived and worked here nearly 400 years ago. But we're still no closer to finding the early house, the Cheney's power base since 1429. We're hoping the field by the church might shed some light on the manor's medieval history.
We've got the geophysics there.
Yeah, we're getting really good correlation for once with the earthworks. So we've got a ditch and bank coming down and going across.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the thing where we may disagree is that I've got what appears to be settlement-type activity there. Mm-hmm. It suggests burning, maybe hearths, maybe ovens.
So does it suggest
rubbish
settlement
pits
to you?
It suggests settlement.
No. This is, you know, this is suggests activity. That really looks like like a building platform.
He didn't say activity.
He said settlement.
He implied more than activity.
Right. Well, this, yeah. let's see. But that is a very regular platform. Yeah. This could easily be a barn. It looks to me
not just gardens then.
But a barn isn't settlement.
It seems as though you two have got this site already stitched up. We haven't even got a trench in yet.
Yeah, and look, you're going to need quite a big trench to solve this.
Along the hedge?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
From on top of this platform,
yeah.
This is where we've got some really nice responses.
Where'd you start?
From where you are now.
And where I am, yeah.
Up here.
We've got the bank and ditch then running down here.
Yeah.
So it's got to come to at least here.
Well, that's fine, isn't it?
So, with the field looking like it could give us our first glimpse of medieval activity and debate raging about exactly what was going on here, Phil leaves his bakehouse behind to take charge.
There's one thing to consider.
Right.
Mick's having a rethink. This might actually be a roadway leading up to the church rather than a boundary. It's possible we may have a cobbled surface with a ditch either side, maybe.
Just seems very clean for me. I mean, if we're anywhere handy of settlement, I would have thought we might have got something.
You got 20 metres to go, yeah?
Oh, wow.
Yesterday, up at the church, we discovered something really odd. There was this board with the priests' names on it, and yet, round about the end of the 15th century, there are a whole load of names that were missing, and John Guy, our historian, kind of suspected that there was something rather dark and sinister going on. So I'm driving through this gorgeous bit of suburbia to meet someone who I think might be able to shed a bit of light on it. Chris.
Tony.
Where is it then?
It's just up this way.
Okay. Chris, 1 minute we're in suburbia. Now we've got this spectacular view, lovely flowers, the sun shining. It's hard to believe that anything sinister ever happened here.
Yeah, Tony, it does look like a rural idyll, but 500 years ago, it was a scene of incredible pain and suffering. If you come up this way, I can show you.
The noble army of martyrs praise thee, the Amersham martyrs. What happened here, then?
Well, Tony, in 1511 and 1522, a set of Lollard martyrs were burnt just about 100 yards over that way.
What were Lollards?
Well, they believe in roughly following the teachings of a 14th century cleric called John Wycliffe. Their most dangerous belief is that we should be able to read the Bible in English.
Why was that dangerous?
Well, it means that the Bible can be interpreted by ordinary laymen rather than through a cleric, so it challenges the clerical monopoly on power.
Why were they burnt here on this hill?
Well, the idea is that the people down in the town would be able to see their suffering. They would have lit up the horizon like candles.
It does sound pretty disgusting, doesn't it? Have you seen this one? John Scrivener burned 1521. His children were compelled to light their father's pyre.
Awful, isn't it?
Pretty horrendous. This is Cheyne territory, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. They may well have lived on Cheyne land.
So rather than being opposed to the heretics, the Cheynes could actually have supported them.
Absolutely. The Cheynes could have been very important in preserving heresy in the area. A sympathetic lord would make life a lot easier for you. And so they could have had a very important role in fostering what some people would come later to think of as an early Protestant church.
So could this have had anything to do with the fact that there are four names of priests missing up at the church?
It certainly could do, yes. It's quite possible that they maybe sponsored a priest in their local chapel who held these beliefs, and somebody embarrassed later, perhaps in Mary's reign, when Catholicism re-emerges as a strong force, might very well have erased their names.
If the Cheynes were heretics themselves, then their house, the largest and most important in the area, may have been the centre of a web of heretical intrigue. The only problem is finding it. Bridge is looking for the front range of the manor house. So far, we've not been able to find anything earlier than the 17th century.
So then, missus, what's the story?
We found
the elusive wall. We've got early bricks, Tudor-esque.
Yeah.
You can see the different colours of the mortar. You've got the mustard here, and you've also got a white.
Now, I've seen that elsewhere on the site, because yesterday, end of day one, we came up with some cut-and-rubbed brickwork, typical 17th-century stuff. That had the mustardy coloured mortar in it. But the earlier phase was with white mortar, bright white, and that's much more typically Tudor. Can I have a look? Can I get
down
there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, really rich golden colour, that one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe in the 17th century, if it's to go with the cut-and-rub bricks that were coming out of that trench, there's a reinvestment in the old manor. And they've taken parts of the old structure down, cleaned it up, put those reused bits in the footings, and then basically tarted up the outside a bit. But you know what? I haven't seen anything on this site yet that's earlier than maybe 1500, 1520, somewhere around there. Seen nothing earlier. And I was expecting a medieval manor that slowly developed. But I can't say that now.
The medieval manor house might remain a mystery, but we do at last have evidence of a house here before the 17th century, of a Tudor house that was taken down and used to build a grand new one, a house that may have sheltered some dangerous secrets.
So we know they were these mad, bad mafia types, but were they also in any way involved in the kind of heresy that seems to have been so rife here?
They'd all been in the tower. In 1414, they'd rebelled as part of the Lollard Rebellion of Sir John Oldcastle. And Thomas Cheney, who bought this house, his brother John, their father Roger, they were all imprisoned in the tower. Roger died in the tower. Thomas and John negotiated their way out. They managed to get pardons.
When did they get respectable?
Well, it took them three generations to get rich enough to start building the Tudor house about the 1520s, then it took them another three generations to turn respectable. That's really the beginning of the 17th century.
Halfway through day two, and the Cheney's family fortunes are beginning to tie in with the evidence of the two phases of building in Bridges Trench. We're extending this trench because although we're starting to understand the evolution of the house, making sense of the actual buildings is proving trickier. We want to match this wall to the map to make sure it really is part of the front range of the old manor. Because our trench over what we hoped yesterday might be the long gallery...
That looks such a modern wall.
Scarily modern.
Yeah, it does.
..isn't looking promising. And our mission to make sense of the mysterious lumps and bumps in the field by the church is proving equally frustrating.
Phil, I could hear you whinging from 70 metres away.
With some justification, Tony, I was sold this trench on the basis of exquisite geophysics.
Which it is.
Absolutely guaranteed settlement. I'll show you the finds. I've kept them in here.
That's not quite...
It's not far wider than Mark.
What have you got there?
Well, there is a bit of a ditch down there, and there's a bit of a round splodge there.
Come on, seriously though, it's answered lots of questions, the trench. It may have not come up with what we wanted, but it's told us that we don't have a boundary at that point there. We might have had an old roadway leading into the church.
I mean, I think now that we've looked at it, I don't think there is a roadway. I think that there is just a bank there. But now we've seen it in section. But yes, there is.
All right, let the man have his say.
We were hoping that this platform might be settlement, a building. I mean, clearly it's not, so it's answered that question. We still don't know how early those features are and what they are. OK, it's not the settlement.
I have to say, it's not only the lack of archaeology that's been hacking you off, it's the quality of the earth.
Exactly, exactly.
It looks like nut fudge, doesn't it?
It's going to be awful to dig. And for that, I thank you, John.
I'm not responsible for the geology of Buckingham. Doesn't he moan?
Back at the house, Matt's got even more to moan about. There's no sign of the long gallery in his trench, just a mountain of rubble and a jumble of walls.
So what have you got, Matt? It looks pretty complicated.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff going on here. We've got this wall coming across the back here, a really sturdy one. There's a return to it coming across this way, heading off towards that brick floor, but the return doesn't line up with it. Mm. You can see it would kind of cut across it there or maybe go over it.
Yep.
The brick floor is sitting on a couple of inches of this really dirty clay. Mm-hmm. That is overlying, can you see where it's marked 215?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The yellow sandy mortar, they are on laid on old roof tiles.
So it is literally just layer upon layer upon layer of stuff, isn't it? Really complicated.
The long gallery is long gone, replaced by a confusion of modern garden walls and sheds. And Bridget's search for the front range isn't making things much clearer either.
I thought you were extending that trench by 1 metre.
So did I, but it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Why?
Well, I really wanted to find a return from this wall here. And by digging the archaeology, I'd then be able to find a fixed point that could be related to the maps so that we would then know exactly where on earth we were in this range of buildings.
I see no return.
Neither do I, unfortunately.
This is a great wall, though, Mick, isn't it?
It's very impressive, isn't it? But there's still a conundrum about it.
Which is what?
Well, if you come round here, look, you can see right down in the foundations of it, you've got moulded bricks. Can you see that sort of half-round one with a nib on it?
Yeah.
And there's a couple more there, and there's another one under there. And I think they're probably medieval.
So we have got medieval on the site, after all.
Well, but it's only four bricks, and I think they're probably being used as rubble anyway.
We'd hoped this was the front of the grand house, but with no return wall and a jumble of reused bricks, it now seems this too is part of a later garden wall. And it's beginning to look like the massive house that once stood here has almost entirely vanished. And there's still no sign of the medieval manor house, which is strange, because we know the Cheneys were here as early as 1429, shooting dogs and beating up the neighbours. It's the end of our second day, and we're putting the bowling green to good use.
How are we playing it? Oldest archaeologist first.
No, the ugliest geophysicist, surely. Yeah, yeah.
Despite the setbacks, spirits seem high.
Ooh.
Yes!
That's it,
victory! I think I have your
bet. No, you don't. No, you don't. Oh! No, you don't, do you? Just kick the jack that way. I win!
And even taking into account the ale, Phil seems suspiciously pleased with himself.
For 2 days, we've been working on this site, assuming that there have been buildings here since way back into the medieval period. But so far, we haven't discovered anything earlier than 1520. No buildings and no finds. But this has just cropped up in Phil's trench, 70 metres away, over by the church, and this is 12th to 14th century. So, for the early part of our story, have we been digging in the wrong place all this time? We'll find out tomorrow. Beginning of day three here at Chesham Boys in Buckinghamshire. And for the last 2 days, we've been looking for evidence of a big house, which we were pretty sure was standing somewhere in that garden from the 1200s. Well, we haven't found anything earlier than 1520. At least, not there. Down there, that's a different story. Phil?
Tony.
Yesterday you humiliated this man. You said that his trench was useless, there were no features in it, that you'd never had such a bad time in your entire life. And then suddenly, towards the end of yesterday's digging, you found this, 12th to 14th century. And now, look at him, it's all smiles and happy family.
Yes, I must confess, I suppose I was probably a little bit premature in my condemnation of the geophysics.
That's unlike you, Phil.
It is, very much unlike me.
How are you feeling now, John?
Smug.
No.
Just right.
What is it you've
got here? You know, we do have this ditch here. That's where that pottery came from. And then down here, we've got another one running parallel to it. But the main thing is now we've cleaned this all up, we can actually start digging it out.
The fragment of pottery suggests that medieval people were living and working somewhere in or near the field by the church. So with just 1 day left, we're throwing everything at it. The geophysics shows a large feature that looks like a bank and ditch running along the bottom of the field. So we're opening a trench across that too. And back on our main site, we're still searching for the medieval manor house.
I'd say hand-rock bricks, 1630.
Okay. Without success. Which is frustrating, because we've discovered that in the early 15th century, Chesham Boys was the power base of the Cheney family, a medieval mafia-style mob accused of torture, intimidation, and even heresy. We know they were living here from 1429, but there's no sign of the medieval house that should be here. And as ever, where there's a mystery, Stuart's convinced there's a map that can solve it.
So what are you doing festering in here then, Stu?
I'm taking 5 minutes to think in a nice, thoughtful, calm place, actually.
Right.
I've been looking very carefully at this 1735 map that we've been using. There's the house.
there, gardens around it, quite clear. Look at the symmetry of the axis. It's all rectangular and regular, all on the same grid.
Yeah, exactly.
What you expect in houses and gardens that period, right? Now, there's something that isn't on that pattern and alignment, isn't there?
Stand out like a sore thumb, that L shape there.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
It doesn't fit with that at all. That's alarm bells start going in my head. Yeah. Why is it like that?
And you're thinking that's a different phase then?
I am. Look, not only at that, there's a boundary down here, a field boundary. But look at the alignment of that. That's the same as that. And if you walk across the church field there, there's a bank and ditch goes across, which is also on that alignment.
Right.
Now, that all suggests that there's something there with sort of an enclosure around it. So when there's been a redesign of this landscape and everything's been put on that axis, there are certain bits that have been left behind they want to keep, and the other bits they've got rid of.
So what is that? Is that that building by the church?
Yeah, I think they call it the Warren. It's the other white house there, just by the church.
I think I'm going to go and have a look at that.
Very wide.
See what we can see, yeah. You carry on festering.
It certainly seems worth pursuing Stuart's hunch, because despite the Archaeological Society's best efforts, we're not finding anything around the house earlier than the beginning of the 16th century. The L-shaped building on the map lies between our house and the church. From the outside, it's hard to tell how old it is. It's been plastered, extended, and the windows are relatively modern. Luckily, the owners have let us in to take a look round.
Hey, look at that, Mick.
Oh, that's good, isn't it? Look at that. So what sort of date is that, then?
Well, that pointed arch, flattened out, nice red brick. Look at that. Oh, let's have a look at the mortar, see if we can get some original mortar. Yeah, there we are, nice and soft and white. That's middle of the 16th century, exactly right for the Tudor period.
Looks like we've got a bread oven in the back here, look, as well.
It does, it's still there, isn't it? Yeah.
So would this have heated, the main living room at the time?
Yeah, what happens is medieval open hall houses have central fireplaces, they're quite smoky. The Tudors get fed up with that. They want individual compartments of rooms, each of which has a fireplace for itself. Yeah.
Jonathan suspects that the Tudor fireplace has been inserted into an earlier medieval house, and the best place to look for evidence of that is in the roof.
A lot of this looks replaced, doesn't it, Jonathan? It looks like new timbers.
It does, mate. It looks like someone's been down the DIY to get some sawn pine, doesn't it?
Yeah, so the old roof's gone by the look of it, isn't it?
Well, it seems it, doesn't it? But, oh, no, look, there's some. There's a bit down there. You see, you've got a couple of peg holes.
Oh, yeah?
Right there.
Yeah. So that's an original timber, but it's not in situ at all.
Yeah, it's good hand-hewn oak. It's not sawed.
Shine your torch down that roof so I can see.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's the Tudor chimney stack.
Ah, right.
Nice. But look at that beauty, Mick.
Yeah.
Stretches all the way back, doesn't it?
And that reused again, do you think?
Whitewashed again, yeah. It looks certainly medieval, I'd say. But then there's the Tudor stack rising right through the middle. So it could have come through a medieval roof.
So what date would you put the original building then?
My guess would be, from its proportions, you're talking about later 14th century.
Right, so later 14th century building, revamped in the 16th century, later roof on it. That helps the story a lot, actually.
It could explain why we've got no medieval buildings on our original site. A sneaking suspicion's beginning to emerge that this house, and not the one we've been digging around for the last 2 days, could be the medieval manor house we've been looking for. So we're extending our geophysics closer to what could be the medieval manor house. And Matt's investigating the bank and ditch that runs across the bottom of the field.
Get one more scoop, get a couple of more scoops out of there and get it nice and orange.
He's found a medieval roof tile, which means the ditch was probably dug in the early Middle Ages. Its alignment with the medieval house suggests it was a boundary to enclose the manor and stamp its owner's authority on the landscape. Immediately in front of the house, geophysics shows a series of features, which could be a path. So halfway through day three, we're opening another trench. And after 2 days of difficult digging, Phil thinks he's worked out what's going on in his trench.
What I want to point out to you is something we didn't know before.
Yeah.
There's the ditch. Now, that's the ditch that it had the 12th to 14th century pottery in. And the piece of pot came from the top of that ditch.
Right.
Now, you'll see this natural comes plunging down there. Now, what I wonder is whether or not we aren't actually looking at an earlier ditch.
Ah, right. So there was a ditch there, and they've dug another one Like alongside it and through it, in fact.
That's what it's looking like. We could, and it is only could, be looking at something that is, you know, late Saxon, so just after the conquest.
That could be sort of 11th, 12th century, couldn't it, before that one? That's rather good, isn't it?
Thanks to these two insignificant-looking ditches, it may now be possible to take the history of Chesham Boys Manor back as far as the Saxon period, and to finally work out what was going on in this field.
One thing that has been consistent is that there has been no evidence for anybody actually physically living here. Mm. What we can say is that they were here, and of course it's near our early house.
Yeah.
And at the other end of the trench, the feature we thought might be a path to the church isn't. Like Phil's ditches, it's a boundary, probably between two small plots of land.
The Cheneys didn't get here till 1429, but we've got archaeology here from much earlier than that. Who owned this place prior to the Cheneys?
Well, this land that we've been digging on had a pretty checkered history for 350 years. About a dozen different people owned it. One of them was a grocer from Hampstead who bought it straight after the Black Death cheap. A tax collector from Essex owned it. But what I've actually found is there's a document from 1368 when a guy called John de Bruce owned this site. This document connects the land, the manor of Chesham Boys, with the church, because he had the right to appoint the vicar. But I also know that this same guy had a manor house broken into on this same land 10 years before. So we've got that connection. It may not have been that house, but there was a manor house on this site.
How far back can we go?
This same land, this manor, was owned in 1213 by the Du Bois family. They were given it by King John, hence the name of the estate. But that is the same land which in Domesday Book was recorded as belonging to the Bishop of Bayeux. But Domesday Book also says that before the conquest, in the reign of Edward the Confessor, two soapmen owned this land.
So we can go right back to Saxon times?
We can go back to exactly before the conquest.
In our trench closest to the medieval house, we've found what looks like a path, and on it an appropriate find.
Slick. Great big iron key.
Where'd you get there, Naomi?
Well, basically, we found it in the fill of what is this potential pathway that's running up towards the house.
Any date?
Well, it's got a kidney-shaped bow. That could be late 14th century, probably medieval, could be a little bit later.
So this could be the key to the front door of the manor house?
It certainly could, yes, the key to the front door found on the driveway leading away from it.
This key is our best find. But the dig doesn't lack discoveries. We've uncovered nearly 1,000 years of history on this one small patch of suburbia.
All day, all four of these guys have been feeding me little snippets of information from their own disciplines, and now I feel like I've got intellectual...
Indigestion.
Indigestion, that's the word. I've no idea where we are. I know that round about the middle of day one, we thought that we'd got a house here and its ancestors on that site had probably been here since the early medieval or sometime.
Yeah.
Do we still think that?
No.
Ah.
No. Right. No, we now think that the medieval manor house was probably in that building there at one stage, and that this was a completely greenfield site with a new building laid out probably sometime in the early 16th century, something like that.
Yeah. That's what's being borne out in the ground, because the earliest phase we can look at is Tudor. I mean, we're talking maybe 1520, 1540, somewhere around there. Beautiful, bright white mortar it's set in. Second big phase is where the brickwork's been cut and rubbed. That's a mid-17th century thing, and that's set in a yellowy mortar. So
two phases of building on this site.
100 years apart.
How does your surveying tie in with this idea of various waves of wealth?
Well, it ties in exactly because the 1735 map we've been using shows massive garden complexes, and you need a shed load of money to build those.
How does that tie in with the history?
Well, that fits perfectly with the history, because the two phases, when they had money, are 1520 to 1540, when Robert Cheney, who's buried in the church, lived here. He made a fortune in sheep farming. He had maybe 8,000 to 10,000 sheep. The second phase was when Francis Cheney, he was 1620 to 1644, he married Anne Fleetwood. She became Anne Cheney. She was a rich heiress because her grandfather had bought land from Henry VIII, monastic land.
Oh, right.
So was it around that time that they built the house where you showed me all that elegant brickwork and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it all stacks up. I mean, maybe a spring day, but it feels like Christmas to me.
3 days ago, we came here armed with one map and the evidence from a small trench dug by the local archaeological society. what we discovered was the story of a dynasty. It begins in 1429, when, just a few years after serving time in the Tower for heresy, the Cheyne family bought the medieval manor house of Chesham Boys. From here, they set out to build an empire, using any means necessary, and it seems they continued to harbour their dangerous beliefs. But fate was on the Cheyne's side. In Henry VIII's newly Protestant England, the family found themselves on the right side of the law. And with that came power and money. Enough money to convert the drafty medieval house into a comfortable Tudor home. And to build a brand new house. The Cheyneys were shrewd political players. By the early 17th century, they'd become pillars of British society, and they needed a home to match. So they replaced the Tudor house with a magnificent new manor house, with elaborate gardens, a fashionable long gallery, and a large bakehouse. But all this lasted little more than a century. The family died out. Despite their wealth and power, they were soon forgotten. And sometime after 1735, their house was demolished. Today, all that remains of the Cheyne's empire are the beams in the present house and its outline on a map. It's a far more complicated story than we'd ever imagined, and one which hopefully helps to answer some of the Archaeological Society's questions.
Has your attitude towards this place changed over the last few days?
Oh, it has, really. It has, because, you know, having a big, experienced workforce here allows you to look at the whole structure of the site. Not only looking at this trench, but at the other trenches. You can see its development in stages, and in a way in which you're able to learn something about the economy of the household and where things were done and how they were done. So from that point of view, it's been an extraordinary event having Time Team here on this beautiful manor house site.
This whole thing started with one small trench dug by amateur archaeologists. Together, we've uncovered a fascinating story of a family that arrived as outsiders and left as viscounts. A story that goes to the very heart of how British society was shaped. And all beneath this one small patch of suburbia.